Welcome to our AES meeting. I'm Dan Mortensen. I'm the chair this year, and I'm going to introduce Steve Turnage, who is a former committee member and chair and other things. And
hello.
Steve will introduce our presenters.
The other humans. So I was at RAIN from 86 to 97 while these guys were. They went a little bit longer. You were 29 years? And you were?
22 years.
22 years. So I was a short timer. But I got a chance to do a lot of other fun things as well. Anyway, so this is Jamie Simmons.
Hi.
DJ name is Mr. Simmons. And you know Steve McAtee already. So who introduced us? Dave Bristow introduced us.
That's right, Dave, yeah.
Dave, who teaches here, he was also the guy that set up the factory patches for the DX7.
DX7.
Which is like... That's sort of amazing. And so when Dave calls and says, I've got this guy you need to meet, you meet him. And so we went out to breakfast, and he says, as you know, as most ignorant people, I didn't think much necessarily of scratching and turntables. And I go, yeah, sort of like we had a drums AES meeting at Robert Lang a few months ago. And usually, you know, the first thing you hit with when you think of drummers are drummer jokes.
Yeah, drool coming out of one side. I'm a drummer, so I know all the jokes.
You're off.
Drool coming out of one
side.
How can
you tell if a drummer's off center?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Anyway, but seeing that, we won't keep going on that. No. But seeing that meeting sort of showed me that behind the scenes, there's a depth and a science to these things that were just stunning. I really had no idea that how much you could really screw up if you don't know what you're doing, basically. So, Jamie came down to a sort of a jam session that we have every so often down at the Players Lounge, and he set up and played. I'm going, wait a second, what are you doing? And I got deeper into this, and the actual depth of what you have to do to play this on a high level is outstanding. And the history, don't worry, you can blush it. The history, what Jamie did... is you came over, you're, speak a moment,
yeah.
Nell, here, listen.
So I, outside of
turntablism. That's a British accent, by the way. Where are you from?
I'm from, well, Brighton in the UK. And I got into writing and composing hip-hop theatre shows. And we had 3 shows off Broadway in New York and toured them over the course of kind of 3 years.
How many were in the ensemble?
It was just 2 of us.
2?
Yeah, yeah. A rapper and myself, Baba Brinkman, who wrote all the lyrics. He's a bit of a genius writer. And yeah, we somehow ended up in New York.
Did you tour the world by any chance?
Yes, we did, Steve.
Did you sell out the Sydney Opera House by any chance?
We did, yeah.
And the Paramount Theatre here?
Standing room too, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah, so there's something there.
Yeah, more than luck, I guess.
Should we turn off the lights and change over to see what you've got there?
Yeah, I'll just have a scratch and it'll show you a couple of basic beat juggles and a bit of backspinning to start things off.
Good.
We good?
Yeah, let's... I'll ask you to do that now. So, Jamie, could you actually play something for us?
Of course I can.
Excellent.
So, basically, I'm just going to cut this.
Put that on! It's time to... Get funky. Come on.
What's that called?
Beat juggling.
This is called beat juggling, where you have the same thing on both ends.
Basic bit of juggling, and it's kind of nice when you've got more of a bass line kind of thing to play with too, so you can really kind of get into it. So this is one of my favorite beats. Basic moves, you can really manipulate things.
Cool. Let's carry on.
With this?
Do you have more? No, we can.
Sure.
Do you have another?
Show you some.
Stop. Hold on, let's actually stop it. Make us silent. There you go.
Are you improvising your changes, or are you going... Is this a song that you figured out before?
This is a song I know quite well.
The music behind
well.
It is no. The song, you know, but...
But your moves.
Oh, no, yeah, I was just basically improvising.
Just messing around.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're not actually playing off of a vinyl. You just have music coming off your computer, right?
See, this is what we're here for. Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, the vinyl has a time
we'll
code, but
we'll talk about that
later.
Mike?
We'll get very deep into all
this. You're actually going to find out the science of turntablism, which is the name of this particular presentation. Because there is, just like the science of cellos, I mean, really we find that this is an instrument, basically a classical instrument, that it has as much under your fingertips that helps you play as a cello feel is. For instance, we got together last Friday and we were setting up, and there were a lot of things I didn't know. It's great to be super ignorant, because then you get to learn a lot. These discs, can you actually hold one up?
Sure.
This is pretty interesting. These are control discs. They have this red thing on the label.
Arrow?
It's sort of an arrow. And you see the red thing on the label up there? They match. And what's on here is not necessarily music, but it's computer code. So... We'll talk there, but
what can we listen to that?
In a moment. I'm going to say that on this, on a regular piece of vinyl, it has the sound in it. It turns out like the low frequency, you actually can feel in your fingertips where that beat is, as compared to this, which is just giving a computer code of what time it is. And I tried to feel it, and it was way fine. No, it's right there. You know, you can really feel it's right there, which is very interesting. It's all a matter of friction.
Yeah, you can feel the different frequencies.
That's a pretty exciting thing, actually.
What, the time
what's
code?
What's actually on the time code? Your question?
Oh, this is my favorite song.
It's amazing. Well, it is, because it can be any song. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I want to relate what I'm seeing to what he's doing.
Okay, let's do that in a moment.
Yeah.
At this point, we hear that there's like a sine wave that's just going on. So if it's just a sine wave, you're not going to find out where in the sine, because any given sine wave is like any other given sine wave. But what we found out is there's noise underneath it. Can we hear it again?
The sine wave?
Yep. Yeah, please. Okay, here's sort of like a record scratch underneath it. So that there's 15 minutes on one side,
10
minutes on the other side, and both all of these control vinyl are pressed the same. Each one is exactly the same. And evidently, inside the mixer, there's a digital map of each side that tells you where in that 15 or 10 minutes you are. And that's how these things talk. Steve?
So conceptually, the sine wave can figure out how fast the record is moving. So if you slow it down, it knows that it has to slow down the file. He's selecting files out of his library, any music file he has. And the computer is going to track where the needle is. It knows the speed from the sine wave because it's a 1 kilohertz tone. So if it's going 33 and a third, it's 1 kilohertz. But if it's going slower than that, obviously it needs to slow down the same amount. And that noise, that little hissy noise in there, helps the computer and the mixer figure out exactly where the needle is. It's at 1 minute and 28.3 seconds. 1 minute, 28.6 seconds is exactly where the needle is right now. And if you back the needle up a little bit, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, so it knows exactly where that needle is.
So it's
and the goal...
Time code.
It is not time code. We'll get to that.
Patents.
I'll have several slides.
Not a time code.
In this system, there are products that you can buy in this DJ world that it is actually time code, like SMPTE time code, 19 kilohertz-y kind of stuff. This particular product doesn't use that. There are other products that use this thing called a noise map. We'll have slides for this stuff to sort of reiterate this stuff in several topics. But it is conceptually time code, if you want to use that word in a generic-y sense, not in the SMPTE timestamp kind of sense. So it knows exactly where that is. So one example is if you put time code on the vinyl, how far do you suppose you have to move the vinyl? Like pick the needle up and move it anywhere, just a little bit. And now move the vinyl record just as slow as you can, and we want to see how long it takes to figure out where the needle moved to. Oh, you need to be in absolute mode.
Yeah, let's talk about absolute and relative mode.
Great. Cool. I want Jamie to explain absolute and relative because that's the context of a DJ, right?
So absolute is reacts exactly how a vinyl record would react. If you pick the... Let me show you. Wherever I put this on the record, you see the time on the right hand up here? It's basically...
5 minutes in. 8 minutes in. 1 minute, 51 seconds.
So the difference between that and relative mode, relative, is like a skip-free mode. So you effectively don't have to worry about the needle skipping.
Wherever you set down is...
Wherever I can play a track. And then I can go, oh... And there, it did too much. But normally it doesn't, actually. So if you're at a club performing or on a stage somewhere and it's wobbling, you've got a bit of give kind of thing. It's not going to skip.
For example, would any drunk people come up near the DJ booth and maybe, like, bump into stuff? Would they ever do that?
Yeah, yeah, and ask you if you've got
anyone
any
done that
Lionel Richie.
Yeah, and drench... beer into the
yeah
the
that sort of thing happens a lot.
Or another example would be in a portable system, would you put the subwoofer right underneath this table?
It happens in clubs.
What do you think
a
subwoofer
really
does really well at with this whole table? Shakes the whole thing. Would
Technics have a pretty solid rubber base to them, which is very absorbent for low frequencies, but not that low at that kind of volume.
And we're going to get back to several topics like this, you know, problems that DJs have. There's
so again, relative and absolute here is, do these ever wear out?
Yes.
And so sometimes if you're always in absolute mode, then the first minute of the thing probably is going to be wearing out faster than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to speak. you made a pun. It's all right. Relative.
It was an unintentional pun. But yeah... That's kind of, with normal vinyl, you go through records a lot quicker. And like Steve was saying, especially the start points of tracks. Whereas with this vinyl, I can get so much more, the control vinyl, I can get so much more life out of it, because I can make the start point anywhere within that sort of 10 or 15 minute, depending on what side you're on, slot, which is cool. We like that.
So you were telling me that where you control is typically on the outside edge. So you'll set zero to be maybe 10 millimeters or so?
Yeah, like a, yeah, I give myself finger like width. A finger width.
Yeah.
In, yeah,
so that
I know that that's where
up.
Where I'm more likely to get, if there's something stuck in my fingers, you know, like it's stuck to the vinyl. And
tack. Yeah, well, you need tack. Yeah,
you
you're
need
telling
tack.
Me that you need
you
tack.
Do need tack. You can, so in, you can do tricks.
In my life, because waking up as an audiophile, as a young person, and having records all through the world, and honoring them and respecting them and smelling them when you open the vinyl and oh, that's good.
The
and then every day.
Only the edges.
Oh, absolutely. Because when I saw him walk into somebody's house, it was actually down at the candy factory, and they had one of these setups going, he goes, oh, yeah! That freaked me out. Go, you touched the record.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of those things that was really sort of scary. But now, touching the record is part of the deal.
Yeah.
I'll get used to it.
Kind of important part
of
the deal.
I guess that's the interface, but otherwise you're just playing records, which is all I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
I want to interject. Can you take a real piece of vinyl and show us some needle dropping? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Thanks.
So let's talk about what this is. So needle dropping is this. I'll just let him show you.
So here's
this is white. Actually, this white piece of vinyl actually has music in it.
Yeah, so I'm going to have
music
to.
In it?
In the old style.
So I'm going to put them on.
And so there it says through, so we're not no longer listening to
so
the
we're
going to
listen to an actual piece of vinyl. It'll sound a lot more warm because it's actual.
It's going to be a lot louder.
We'll get back to that topic.
Okay. Bear with me a sec.
Okay.
Give me a second. He needs to find the right spot. And.
Okay, so we go.
Now watch what he's going to do.
A beat. That was luck. So needle dropping is basically lifting the stylus off of the vinyl, dropping it back in the right point so it creates a loop.
At the right time.
At the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll see how this goes. And we'll stop it there.
Anybody think they can do that?
On Friday, there was no pops or scratches at all. It was almost...
No, well,
I can bring the video in.
So think about what just happened there, right? Get your head around that for a little while. Did you hear a nice, steady rhythm, and you heard this little click in between? So he's got the dexterity in his hands to pick the needle up exactly at the end of a one measure and move it back just the right amount and start on the down a one in time and just groove through that. It's a mechanical loop. Think about that for a little while. That's pretty wild. So
yes.
The software gets into
we have a question.
Making that kind of concept easier. Keep going.
When you can get your music from here, how often would you actually use a real vinyl?
Well, I still like scratching on real vinyl. It for me, I can feel where I am.
Can you show
know,
us?
Like the an intricate part of scratching is the part before at the end of a sound and before the start of a sound. And you can get like the reverb tail going in, leading into like the start point of a hit. And it's just, you can feel that. You can feel that space. You
can you
feel
show us
the,
a little bit?
Sure.
If you play a stringed instrument or a mechanical acoustic instrument of any kind, saxophone, doesn't matter, your entire body is so used to like a saxophone, all your bones know exactly how to make that thing. He's doing the same thing. It's just, you can feel it in the vinyl bumps. But that goes away when you use the sine wave.
Go through, right?
And so it's like kind of like ripping out. It's kind of like the difference if you were, how many people play guitar? A lot of guitar is common. What if I handed you an electronic guitar that had no strings? How nice would that be? Not very nice. I'm a drummer.
Can you bend?
If I try to play electric drums, don't have a clue because I play acoustic jazz with brushes and stuff. So I'm so used to the acoustics, and he's got that in his in a piece of vinyl. So that's why the real vinyl is so nice. And to learn on it, too.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to, without you actually spending time getting the feel of the of a constant tone on a vinyl and then a tone that has natural gaps or beats, the low frequencies, the grooves change completely on the vinyl. And it, it, you can just feel it. It's just got a nicer feel to it. But from a convenience point of view, having been able to go and do a gig with a laptop and two pieces of vinyl, of you know, timecode vinyl, is a luxury.
Is it inconvenient to carry a crate full of vinyl?
Yeah, they're heavy.
It's heavy.
And if you're flying, if you're going to do a gig abroad somewhere, it's they're normally like heavier than your checked luggage amounts. You have to. There's the cost of transporting them.
And
wear and tear, you know, like you got some classic records. If you play in a funk set, you don't want to completely, you know, there's some records that I'm like, no, I'm not scratching on that. So I can just record it and use what I've recorded.
What if you, like, if, when you have a crate, what if your crate gets stolen? Has your crate ever been stolen?
Yes. Yeah, I had probably about 2,000 pounds worth of rare.
Now, when you say 2,000 pounds, that's not over your airline luggage weight.
It's no, that's the British kind of value of those records. I mean, they're probably not worth as much now because there's been a lot of reissues lately of stuff. But back then, when it happened, there was two Technics 1210s, a rain mixer, and two crates of very rare vinyl stolen from Acton in London. Don't go to Acton. Don't go there. If you do, don't take records.
You know what's really, really, really irritating? When you don't hit record.
Oh, brother.
Okay, now, hi, I'm Steve, and this is Steve, and we've been at Rain, and... Okay.
So, yeah.
That was fast forward, I think.
With the feel between the gap, you can really feel the sound change. So it's just, I don't know, for me, nothing will replace it. But there is a convenience factor of it.
Just and two pieces of vinyl?
Two pieces of vinyl and a laptop.
And a set list. You take it to clubs, and you typically don't bring your own decks if a club has a pair.
Yeah.
So what happens there when you go into a club?
Well, you take your own, I would definitely advise anyone to take their own cartridges and stylus, because
Why is that?
Because the equipment tends to get trashed, and these stylus are fantastic. They're the Shure M447. A lot of clubs will not have the Shure stylus, and they might
have for long.
If I was there. Yeah.
What are the characteristics of the stylus that are important?
Is it just the stylus, or is it the full cartridge?
The thing is with this, these have a really loud output, really low wear on the actual vinyl itself, which is a big pro, especially if you're playing with old rare vinyl, you know, that you don't want to damage.
Or on a world tour.
And you don't need to have as much weight on these cartridges just because of the balance of them is just so good. Do you know what I mean?
How many would take their hi-fi records and play them backwards on the cartridge they have? Wouldn't do it in a hi-fi audio audiophile world, right? You wouldn't.
Just the Led Zeppelin.
Just the Zeppelin, yeah.
If you, with your right hand, are you modulating or something? Or what are you doing with right?
Yeah, kind of like an LFO, okay. But really quick. So basically, this is just letting the signal through. So it's open and closed.
Okay.
It's cross-fading. So closed between the two.
And open.
He's moving this crossfader. That's the thing that's called a crossfader in the mixer.
So that's like you've got two hands.
It's like a bow.
We're like strumming.
And these are actually like the bow. And he takes them with him in a little glasses case.
On
these
cheap
two guys, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, I just trust them. Do you know what I mean? They're not. I know that when I get the balance right on whatever turntable I'm going to use, they're not going to totally trash my records, and they're less likely to skip.
Mike?
So the Shure M447 was originally a jukebox cartridge, then modified by Shure. And the reason that DJs got their stuff like them, the high output, and the cantilever, the thing that supports the diamond, is rigid enough. I think a lot of people who grew up in the room who were audiophile people and had good turntables and good phono cartridges, cantilevers are very delicate, and you can't back cue an audiophile cantilever because you'll break it.
Ah, interesting.
And you have the difference. Is this a moving magnet design?
Do you know?
Because there's moving coil designs, which is where the way that these things work down in the groove is that's one channel and that's one channel when it's stereo, and the transducer in there that turns it into electricity is you take a coil of wire basically and move a magnet through it, and that generates electricity. Now, we have two ways of doing this. We could take the magnets and move them through coils of wire, or we can take little coils of wire and move them around magnets, which are much more delicate, but that's the kind I always liked, was the moving coil cartridges, and they have different behaviors.
Yeah.
Something else that was really interesting, let's actually talk, it'll probably come up later, but the RIAA curve.
Yeah.
How the way that records sound, the physics of putting the groove in, if you actually, there's a curve that increases the high frequencies and decreases the low frequencies. Because if you have the low frequencies going, movement corresponds to the frequency. So if you have the low frequency as much as it is, it's going to move all over the place. And the high frequencies won't actually get taken. So there's a thing called the RIAA curve, where before they lathe these guys, they turn the bass way down, and they take the high end way up. And that's why if you plug a turntable straight into a line in of an amplifier, it sounds like the bass is way down and the treble's way up. What's with this? You need to go through a phono preamp that has an RIAA curve that decodes, that then pushes the bass way up and takes the treble way down. So it becomes flat. And so that's part of the key. Now what's interesting, it's something that Steve talked about when we were setting this up, was it's not just what's in the groove that has the bass turned up and the treble turned down. It's everything about it. So if you bump on this,
you can
the
hear
bass it. Is turned way up.
Which is why
the RIAA curve.
Which is why a subwoofer is not a good thing to put under this table.
Because it amplifies the bass so much more.
And yep. He is mechanically used to all of those things in a mechanical world, just like cellos and where you are on the
frets, feedback on
anything. To hear that and feel it and all that and the mechanics. So the whole goal when you're developing products that do these kind of things is to make this guy's mechanical life the same.
So, for instance, the MP3 doesn't have an excess of bass in it necessarily to make it sound like it's coming off of a turntable, does it?
No.
Do you have to fix something like that?
So one of the keys to these products to make them sound good to a professional level DJ is to select any song in your MP3 file, you know, in your MP3 library.
Or Waves.
There's lots of file types that these software products support. AAC and WAV files and all kinds of them. And so you need to make that thing sound like it's actually pressed into the record, because that's what the DJ's ears are expecting to hear. And that's not what you download from iTunes. So the products all have this emulation of what the needle would sound like if you applied the characteristics of that needle and its architecture and the RIAA curve and adds that to the sound that you select from your library, which is pretty heavy, part one. And part two is you're going to slow that down a lot, which is something MP3 inherently doesn't do. So you have to have another algorithm that figures out, as the vinyl record slows down, exactly what does that sound like in the world and context of a cartridge and a needle and the RIAA curve, all those things combined. And that, so the software has to emulate all that stuff, and it does. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Okay. Any questions so far?
What are these tone burst looking things in the middle?
These color things?
Yeah.
That's you, Jamie.
Well, that's the content of the file. So what you're seeing there is...
It goes a little something like this.
So the different colors are different higher-end, high frequencies versus low frequencies? This strip here is the entire audio file. This is the whole song, this little strip. And this is just the few seconds around the needle.
And then there's a pointer up there, the white pointer. Is that where it
is? That's where it's currently playing in the entire file.
20 seconds of this?
Yeah.
And what's the stream on the left of that?
This stream here?
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, it's in through mode because I've got actual record on there. So when I'm using two time code copies...
Control vinyls.
It will display... whatever the file is that's on. You're in through mode and just playing vinyl, you don't get that display because it's an analog signal.
Should we put the other control vinyl on, or are you going to show us something?
It's three views of all the... It's three different views of the same...
Totally can.
This is the entire file.
It's great. Control.
This is the very most zoomed in, and this is a little bit more of the file. So you can see where things line up. Because... So if you're a radio DJ... You would, especially if you're doing a disco or a dance or something where you want the down of one to happen, this helps people who are not used to mechanically doing it. No, he came from the old school long enough ago when he could put the needle down and feel where one is. Or you can listen with headphones. He doesn't use headphones. Lots of DJs don't use headphones, but some do. You can find where one is so that when you take the crossfader and fade from this song going 1, 2, 3, 4, 1 to this song, you need to know how that works, and these colored things help you figure out where that is.
They look like they're in line right now. Yeah. You'll notice that both of these bars, the arrows, are pointing up. And on the turntable, each of these arrows are pointing up.
Yeah, you can't actually see that, but they're synced.
They're basically aiming at you.
And so he has pulled up the same song over here on one deck, and both Beastie Boys songs, same song. Here's what a little bit. Here's the name of the song. Here's the artist. Here's some things called cue points. Cue points is the idea that, I want to find where the chorus is. And so in the file, we save a spot where the chorus is. Oh, and here's the second verse. Oh, and here's the bridge.
And he has these little buttons down here that have dice 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s on them.
Yeah.
That gives you the cue points. Are they
basically
here?
I can get to wherever I want really quickly. So I can just put that on. I know that I can jump to that part. I can jump to that
part. Jumping around between these spots.
If you look at the time on the record that's playing,
it's
going back and forth.
Mikey May.
Hold it. Hold it. Start again.
So the electronic markers are brilliant because DJs used to mark records with tape.
Yes.
Do you still mark records with tape?
Yes.
Yeah. It does. And so this gives you ultimate selection on where you can put cue points. You can change the cue points at any time you like.
But that's only on the control vinyl.
Sure.
You still need to put tape on the
regular
vinyl to tell you where things are.
Yeah, so this is a real vinyl. And
this
basically
that's put there too, huh?
Is working exactly the same as what they are. So I have a visual reference because what I'm doing, I need to be ready before it happens. So I need a visual mark.
And it's a game of angles, because you have one full rotation, obviously gets back to 12 o'clock again. Where you're at a given place, you say, I'm doing this 1 o'clock thing, or I'm doing this 10 o'clock thing.
And that's the thing with vinyl records. If you're in like a situation where you're battling, for example.
What's battling?
Battling is when you're going up against other DJs and you're showing your technical.
You go back and forth.
Basically, yeah.
It's so, like a battle of the bands, but it's two DJs or four DJs or some number.
Yeah. And if you're using vinyl, you need to be able to get to where you want really quick. So I would actually probably, if I wanted to use get to here, I would put a sticker here, but right up against up to the needle. So I can drop it on there, and it's going to then slip into the beat. And I don't have to worry about headphones getting queued up. Like, I know that it's going to be there, or, like, close enough.
And you know what angle it is to the 12 o'clock
tape
that you have, too, because it's just right around there. So I have a question for the audience. Is this a little deeper than we had ever thought that this kind of thing is? Mike, you might have had a clue.
Mike's sold this stuff for decades.
But when I started to see the behind the scenes stuff, it's remarkable. Shall we go over to the slideshow?
Sure.
I have a question here.
Oh, good question. Yep. Yes, sir. Question.
Jamie.
Yeah.
Do you say you put the tape on top of another groove, and then when you place it on there?
Yes, so you're effectively ruining what the tape's on.
You would be able to play whatever you put the tape over, essentially, right?
Yeah, because it would just play the tape, which is not a nice tone generally. It's I could show you if you wanted. Sure. It's
a tricky. I was just wondering, because you just wouldn't be using that part of the record anyways. Would be the idea.
And if you wanted to, you'd have another version. So you buy more than one disc sometimes. Why would you buy more than one disc? Well, it would wear out.
For beat juggling.
Beat juggling makes you're doing the same
back spinning stuff.
And if you want to put something that's underneath the tape, you want to use that, you can actually use that on a different disc.
That's true.
If you need to.
You could do, yes. Yeah. You could.
And sometimes.
But if you were beat juggling the same song, you'd probably want the marker at the same point so you could get to it.
But if you really like the song right before it, then you could just get your third disc, right?
You could do that. That's absolutely right.
Okay.
Man, yeah.
I felt good with that.
Good.
Steve.
Good. So some of this is summary. Question?
Yeah, just a quick question. Turntable, is there an option for you to do stuff like compression or EQ?
EQ is an option. Compression would be an option, but I can't see why I would want to do that because the files are going to be pre-compressed anyway, right? It is EQ. We've got basic EQ, three-band EQ on here, and also a high and low pass filter.
And there's a bunch of effects built into the software as well.
Yeah,
so,
and
we'll go into that a little later because
we'll
now we're to the slides. So Steve set.
So some of this is just kind of a little more formal slideshow look at things. So we did this introduction already, and Jamie's doing the demo, and we're talking a lot about the history of this stuff and how crates and the content and the file. So a lot of this is like summarizing.
Let me jump in just for a second.
Sure.
Is that when we get back here, the piece of music that turned you on to this, we will share with you after the break here.
Yeah. So we've been using some terms, so I put a little definition of terms together. One is turntablism. We are talking about the science of turntablism. We didn't really define what that is. So it's manipulation of music using turntables on a mixer, and the whole thing is an instrument. So this is the instrument, and it happens to use a computer these days because that's required to make the music you want. Choose anything you want. DVS is a term we'll use, or vinyl emulation. This whole system, and there are several on the market from different manufacturers, is called a digital vinyl system, or DVS, or vinyl emulation. We're emulating real vinyl, but we're using a computer and control records, or control vinyl, it's called, which is the next thing, control vinyl, which is the special record we've been showing and talking about the whole time. It's the special vinyl record that we're using here that helps determine the position of the needle, the direction, and what speed it's going, so it knows exactly where to grab the file you've loaded so you can play that song at that instant, backwards, forwards, at any speed, etc.
And either in relative or absolute mode.
Exactly. And then the control signal, we'll see a picture of a slide of this here after a while. What's actually pressed into the vinyl, because it is not music, as we've already seen. We were listening to that little sine wave with the noise in it. So this is what you guys are used to with turntables, right? Records?
That's my mom.
Yeah, 1950s, 60s. I don't know what year that is, but Edison came up with this, and if he were alive today, I think he would be bowled over with what we're doing with vinyl
records. I think we'd be bowled over if Edison was alive today.
We would.
He'd be a very old man.
Then, of course, there's the hi-fi world. Any people have these at home? This is the $400,000 turntable, if anyone has that, so that's hi-fi world. Mm-hmm. So I just thought it'd be fun to look at these old turntables, but really what we're talking about is this turntablism idea where you're using the record to cue things up and go backwards and scratch forward and backwards. So there's whole schools. How many schools did you have to go to, Mike, to teach this stuff?
There's probably 10 or 15, and the Beat Junkies in California Historical are announcing their new institution in California, right?
So there's
just Google the Beat Junkies, and you'll see where they are in the hip-hop world.
Yeah.
Google D Styles is probably one of the finest scratch DJs you'll ever hear.
Keith?
As part of the science of it, I guess I'm curious, why would that turntable costs so much. What is the difference in technology and price points that gives you that thing? I know that, I mean, speakers and things like that is materials or the drivers or the amps or whatever else you want to go into it, but what is it?
Are you talking about the $40,000 one or this one right here?
I'm talking about any of them, but you mentioned the extremely expensive hi-fi versus what he's got versus something like this.
Yeah. I was just trying to sort of give people more context because you say turntablism and they don't really have any context of what that means. And for this slide, I'm trying to summarize that this is the product that if you're a DJ of any kind doing this turntablism, you buy this Techniques 1200. And there's whole families of these, but that's the one that you saw 90% of the time.
What's that slider over there on the right?
Yeah. So remember how you traditionally would use these? It had the feature set that you needed as a DJ back in the 70s when they came up with this. One would be, one song's a little slower than the other, so you had this pitch control that's still on here.
Yeah.
And so you can still use the pitch control if you're mechanically used to doing that to get the time of the two songs in time so that you know where one is and they come in at the same tempo, 120 beats per minute or whatever. So that slider is really important. Now, granted, you can go to the software and just hit a button. It'll do it for you. But if you're old school, that's like cheating.
Yeah. It's like auto-routing from... Now, did we answer your question, though?
No.
The audiophile thing that I think he's relating to is turntables are like art form, like guitars. So there's quality of instrument, there's quality of materials and craftsmanship, and then there's the mystique of an audiophile anyway. So how good are our ears? How well can we listen? We all change as we age. But you can build a tone arm that's really, really low in mass, and it really reacts very, very rapidly to a certain phono cartridge. And those kind of instruments are more expensive. So there's a whole following of people who have built hand-built machines or low-volume machines, where people who are audiophiles who might play tube amplifiers and use specialty cables and certain DACs that they're playing back with digital audio, they amass those things, and the turntable is always a major part of it. Phono cartridges can cost $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 for a phono cartridge.
Why? Yeah.
Still, the quality of the materials they use, they're hand-built, they're very, very accurate. You can take a Shure phono cartridge and have a tracker record, and you can take a Sumiko phono cartridge and have a tracker record, and the results will be different, and they'll sound different. Sounds can be very minute to some people, or they can be more dramatic, but that's the art in the audiophile world anyway. It's like the art of instruments.
So it's all about how accurately does it translate the bumps and grooves to the speaker coming out of the...
That's
how much distortion or quality is lost based on the technology it's going through. That's
exactly. Yeah. And another thing I like to think about, you know, think about this with any product market of any kind. Doesn't matter whether it's a computer or a monitor or a car or anything. If someone's going to pay $10,000 for a phono cartridge, it's going
to
sound better to them, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right. Well, or licorice. Here's $10,000 licorice.
Are
yum.
Are you saying it's smoke and mirrors?
Yeah.
It's like the better quality that is, as well as obviously the quality of the digital audio in terms of its sample rate and bit depth. But there isn't sample rate and bit depth. It's analog on the
analog.
So
yeah, you're right. There's a turntable platter that weighs 55 pounds. It's copper. It's spun copper. And the guy who built it and built the motor system for it, he used a micro CD, said it was isolation, and he wanted that was the right mass of copper to have that interaction totally isolated. So that was his.
Yep.
And, but you look at it, it's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful machining. So Win Sao, who built a turntable, or Sao Win, rather, who built a turntable, it's in the Smithsonian, it's 3/4 inch plexiglass and stainless steel. When I saw it at the CES show in 76, it was $4,400 then. Like lab coat.
So if you talk to Jamie about why he buys this one, and almost every DJ in this turntablism world buys this kind of turntable, because it has the feature set they're used to, the mechanics, how it's laid out, the mass, the rubber on the bottom.
Well built. Like compared to, there's been a resurgence in turntable manufacturing, but the build quality, there seems to be like a new design, like a generic design, right? Whereas these are just kind of, they're solid. If you were to feel the weight of one of these, you could actually carry them out to my car afterwards if you wanted to.
Can we talk about this and that?
Strobe. And the servo inside?
The strobe, okay.
The servo, yeah.
Yeah, so just how do you tell how fast, if you're accurate at like 33 RPM? Do you got a way to find that out?
Well, yeah, just by these.
These little lights.
Little dots.
When you can come up here and look at the break, there's little lights in these guys. And as the record spins, if you're not used to anyone not used to this idea.
This is the one that shows you the.
When the record spins, there's a little dot here.
That shows you where you're at.
If the dots don't move, then you know you're at 33.
So over here, that's the one that shows the speed. This here is aligned with where the turn, where the stylus goes. So you can actually
she goes straight to the spindle.
You can see where your piece of tape on the vinyl is. So you're at the.
It's queuing. Okay, sweet.
Let's keep going because
yeah, a
lot.
Hit it.
So we've talked about a lot of these. So some of this is summary. So we talked about how real music, if you have vinyl with real music in it, it's heavy, it's expensive to buy, it's expensive to create. You have to ship it places, you have to replace it if it gets stolen. Making multiple copies or getting multiple copies to do your DJ art is important. If you're doing wedding DJs or somebody wants to suddenly hear some song that you didn't bring with you back in the 70s, you had to bring all the vinyl records with you so that you play the songs that people wanted to request. I mean,
Afternoon Delight. I really need to hear
the Starland Vocal Band.
Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie. You got it. Yeah.
That's next.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that. Here's another one. For your Broadway shows, off-Broadway shows, did you create all the music yourself?
Yeah. I wrote all the music myself, and thanks to this setup, I didn't have to press any vinyl. Now, if I was to press enough vinyl to cover 90 minutes worth of music, and given the
how
wear
many shows
point,
were it hundreds of shows?
We were doing 6 shows a week.
For how many weeks per show?
It all depends, you know, like
3 or 4 years of 6 shows a week.
We did 6 shows a week for years.
You could have gone through a vinyl duplication press if you had to. Basically.
Yeah, and it would have cost a hell of a lot of money. You know, like these are also like 12, 15 bucks each per record. They last when they've gone, they're gone. You don't have to worry about it. It's not your favorite record that's trash.
It's
trashed.
All your
it's
favorite records
replaceable.
Is what it actually is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's one we haven't done. Can you manipulate live audio?
Should we do that and then maybe
I think we should do that. Sure. I think we should physically show what happens on the software screen as this goes. I'm going
to
plug Jamie back
we're
in.
We're about to plug that in. So
I'm plugging this in so it tends to hiccup the computer for a second while it does that.
There we go.
Hey.
So in other words, I don't know if you've noticed, if you follow almost any band these days, in lots of genres, there's a DJ on the stage if you go see him in concert. Which is pretty wild.
Ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Are you ready now? Is this something you're ready to do? Are you ready? We got some feedback. How can I get away from that? Are we ready? You got it?
Do it again.
Okay, all right. Are you ready? Are you ready to see this? Are you thinking that this is going to be something that we haven't seen yet? And you there? Sound a little ringy. Okay.
Pop a spoon.
What can you do with that?
Save? Did that work?
Save.
Doesn't seem to want to save.
I could see why. It was really a horrible performance.
You weren't in tune, Steve. You weren't in tune.
Oh, it's because I gave it. There must be another file called Steve.
Of course there is.
You get everywhere now.
Okay, all right. Are you ready? Are you all ready? Are you ready to see this? Are you thinking that...
So we do a lot of improvisation.
That's right.
Don't
that's
we? Right. We do. With your crew.
He's sat in with the Bats of Ballard.
Yeah. So we would real-time take instruments like saxophones and guitars, and I would scratch rhythm, basically, like rhythm sections underneath the band. But
okay, all right. Are you ready? Are you all ready? Are you ready?
So half the time when you listen to pop radio and you hear the singer like stutter or whatever, that's probably because it's a DJ playing that back. I mean,
unless you doesn't work at all.
Unless you had an understanding of what's going on or you see somebody in concert do that, you're not sure whether that's some, you know, computer thing or a DJ or both. Or so fascinating.
Yes, pretty great function.
Okay, all right. Are you ready? Are you all ready?
Go back to slides.
Yes. Okay. We're going to take this off. which makes you glitch. Okay. You done?
Yeah.
There we are. Perfect. Thank you. Is everyone enjoying themselves?
Yeah.
This is science. Good. Thank you.
All right.
We can manipulate live audio now.
You can manipulate live audio.
Yeah.
So we already talked about this, the physical manipulation of songs and editing them, like the needle dropping that he was doing, that kind of idea. That's what that slide's about. And then why the feature set of these turntables and the mixer and the software, they all combine to solve problems you would have, like in venues, when the... What are some of the problems you would have?
Vibrations from bass.
Vibration from bass.
People dancing. One of the good things that this has, like a safety net built into it, if someone's really drunk and accidentally falls over and knocks your stylus off, it has the brains to go into a mode called internal mode. And it then just slips into playing the file as like, rather not off of the vinyl, but internally. And then
from
you can then clean it up and
accident.
Kind of get it back in the right place and switch it so it's going back into vinyl mode without too much of a problem, which is a really helpful thing.
Great. So we're solving a lot of problems, the groups of products that do these things.
Yeah.
So you saw him load and manipulate the live audio file. You saved the file, saved it to a file, loaded it to a deck, played that stuff live so you can take your MC mic or a live saxophone like we're just talking about and play any audio file on your computer. That'll work. We already talked about manipulating actual vinyl. Is something he can always do and goes back to trusting and loving because that's what he's used to in the mechanics and you can feel the vibrations. But the vinyl still wears out. Even these control vinyl sine waves still wear out, so you need to fix that in several ways we've talked about. And we talked at length here a little bit about cartridges and why they're important, the high speed, fast, and backwards, you know, all that stuff. And we'll get into this maybe after the break here.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any questions?
Let's keep going. So let's go to a point till we have to stop. And I think that we'll get to it pretty soon.
Yeah. What about recorded video? I'll have a slide for this.
Yeah, we
do. So... another thing you can do is this particular software, you can buy a plugin for $99, and the plugin adds onto the software the ability to not only select an audio file to play back, but you can select a file that's a video file that will play back the audio and the video.
And you can go back and forth with control vinyl in the video.
Yeah, you can manipulate the video. Yeah.
So we'll do that after the break. We'll maybe cue one up. And
yeah.
Did you bring one?
I've got a couple. It's just whether it we'll get it right.
Yeah.
Get it right.
Okay. And what's next? Because there's going to be something.
Okay. So this is like the history of the products that shipped. So let's say 16, 17 years ago, this product Final Scratch came out. Stanton Company came out with that product first, and then they worked with Native Instruments a few years later, and they launched more versions of that over the years. That's where it sort of came out for the first few years back in 2001 or so. And then other products. This is the product we have up here. It's called Serato DJ. It's a New Zealand company that makes the software. I work for the company Rain, makes the mixer, and so we were partners for how many years, Mike?
Well, up until I left. So
yeah.
We started in 2000. First product was released in 2004. Partnership started that year before you were a part of that process.
Yeah.
So we were their original partners and brought the software to the United States. Made them all very rich people. God bless them all.
Yes. So, there you go. So that's the software is called, a lot of people use the word Serato to describe the software, but the software is actually called Serato DJ. It used to be called Serato Scratch Live, and Serato is the company name. But they've licensed it to many other electronics companies, so you can buy Serato from lots of different companies now. And there's other competitors that have other products that do the same kind of thing. So there's a whole slew of them out there. Here's what we have set up up front.
Yeah, let's still go through these until we get to the tech piece.
Sounds good.
Because it's only 8:35.
Great. Here's what's going on up front. We got the turntable that's sending the sine wave audio into a phono stage into this product. And then that device is sending the data about what is going on, where what the speed of the vinyl is and where it is in time. And that gets sent up USB to the computer, and the software figures out where the needle is, etc., and plays back the MP3 file or whatever audio file you've selected down through USB for audio now, not data, and that audio gets converted to analog audio out of here and goes into whatever mixer you have. So a lot going on to figure this out in real time. So you got essentially analog audio here, a sine wave, so there's an A to D converter in there, and that's a millisecond or so latency, and then USB sending data up here is relatively fast, but then the computer needs to figure out where it is in time, the song you've selected, and then send audio back down, which is a little bit more latency, and then that goes to a D to A converter and comes out here, and so that all has to happen in such a time that he is not thrown off by how much delay there is when he moves the record versus when he hears it.
It's like latency on a guitar synthesizer.
Very much.
Same idea. You show that to a degree.
Yep. Or if you play like an electronic wind instrument, if you're a saxophone player, same idea. So that's this round-trip latency from when you move the record to when you hear it. Depending on the computer, it's really a big function in the early days especially, a big function of what the power of your computer is and how it's set up and what USB drivers are used and all that. So it's between 7 and 10 milliseconds of delay from when you move it to when you hear it.
What's the little red cable from the A to D converter, the scratch converter, to the controller?
What'd you say?
This one right here.
The little red cable. The only cable you didn't describe.
Oh, this one? That cable, it could be a microphone.
Or a
flex. What about the other microphone?
So this one is, you can go from, you can talk into this mic and be the MC mic, and that goes, that mic audio analog goes into here.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's just a way to add a mic to the system. And some of the products, like this product, what we just did is, let's go to the next slide, we'll keep going. There's several ways and several kinds of products you can do this in. Here's another product that has more channels. So this let you do two computers, two DJs. In other words, you go to a nightclub, the DJ is not there for 8 hours. He's there for his 2 hour or 3 hour shift or whatever it is. And so another DJ has to come in and plug in his computer USB, and the music should never stop, of course. So you need this ability to switch over DJs. So the products needed two USB ports, the blue cables here. And that way you can switch off DJs, or there's whole groups, and Mike can list off dozens of them, where there are multiple DJs, all where one guy is all he does is the bass parts. And this is very simplified, but he's the bass player, but he's using turntables to play all bass parts. There's a guy over here, he's the drummer guy. All his samples are all the drums, and there's another guy. I mean, so you have whole bands that's what they're doing, is playing DJ land. Like, it's phenomenal. One of the first years we did these products, we had a jazz band from San Francisco come that had an upright bass and an acoustic drummer and a DJ, and that was the band, a trio.
Live Human.
Live Human, yeah. Wonderful. And you'd think that a trio with a DJ and a bass and a drummer would not be very interesting. It was fascinating because I play in jazz bands and trios and stuff. So that's another possible setup. Notice we're moving away from turntables, and you can buy the products also ship with an audio CD, because then you get CD players back when you could buy CD players. Remember that? Remember that era? Is everyone old enough? Yeah. So you can use CD players, because some people weren't used to turntables and cartridges and all that. They just wanted to use CD players. So you can use those also, and then use whatever mixer you have.
So you scratch on that little guy.
Yeah,
you can scratch. It's about the size of a CD.
Yeah, literally scratches. That's the same concept.
It's not right.
In a smaller.
The establishment claims it's not right.
It's not right.
Yeah, if you're, depending on what genre you come from. Wedding DJs tend to like these CDs because it's easy, and you can cue them up and you hit a button and it synchronizes, and all works very, very simple. So here's a little bit more complicated. Here's two DJs in a more serious mixer, like
hold
a four channel.
Excuse me.
Yeah, hold on.
Red. Is it your?
Oh no, green.
No. Okay.
Who? What are you looking for?
Also, it is parked behind me.
Yeah.
A red Subaru driver, owner of a red Subaru.
Red Subaru?
Mm-hmm. You sure it's not green, bro?
No, it's red.
It's the first.
It's double parked behind the old CRV.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
All right, man.
No problem. And here's the video setup. If you are selecting a file that has video in it, you just take the, these days you take your Thunderbolt output and you plug it into your projector, and now the projector shows the video playback, and on the screen, you can look at this here on the break. We have a little preview of the actual video, and you can have two videos, and you can scratch videos, and the video stops, and you can do this kind of thing, and amazing stuff. So, yes?
And so that's how DJs have their audio visual as well as their audio, right?
Exactly.
Play it through their whatever software they're using.
Exactly. So they just happen to be manipulating an audio file that has video. It's a video file. You have to do some special encoding, because otherwise you're going to get weird video artifacts because you're slowing the video down a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if and anyone in the video here, this means you have to encode the video with something called keyframes, which are frames that redraw the whole screen, is good one way to think of it. The keyframes have to come more often. So when you encode the video, you can't just go get a YouTube video and put it in there, because when you go to try to scratch it or slow it down, it, the video is just going to look like
it's not just MP4, for instance. The standard MP4. H.264.
Yeah, standard H.264 would work, but you want keyframes that are more often than most videos you find on the internet, especially. So that's that. Here's these control vinyl records.
That's
Here's
what we can come back with.
Okay, great. Let's come
that's
back with
that's a good place for it.
Break time.
Okay, so we don't have door prizes, so there's really no reason to break, but
we
will anyway.
Water and cookies.
We have water and cookies.
We have more cookies than usual.
And we're going to be ending up earlier than we usually do, to just for the house. So let's make this 10 minutes. You've got there. When the minute hand goes to the 11, let's be back in our seat, shall we?
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Cool.
Wasn't that easy?
Yeah.